In this moment where there's a lot more complexities facing your grid, I think we ought to take a look at our regulatory system and figure out what still works and what doesn't work that we should try and modernize.
What the commissioner's role really is today and how that's changing.
They need to be just as innovative and just as forward-thinking as the rest of the system.
The decisions that these businesses are making versus the impact that it might have on everyday people, how cost is being shifted, allocated, who's paying for what.
For a lot of folks, that actually is creating a lot of frustration. There is an opportunity, I would say an imperative, for a lot more education from utilities to their customers about how all this stuff works. If electric rates continue to increase at the rate that they are, then you're going to reach a situation where there will be significant consumer backlash.
Hey, everybody, and welcome once again to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. Now, when I say utility regulation, what's the first word that comes to mind? Broken, baffling, maybe a little backwards. It's probably not force multiplier. Typically, innovation and regulation are considered diametrically opposed in conversations about what's driving us toward the future of energy. But what if that isn't really the case? What if utility regulation could be the foundation of how energy costs, innovation, and equity are shaped, and the key to building a better, more equitable energy future? Today's guest is focused on shaping that narrative, and he's pretty darn good at it. Charles Hua is the founder and executive director of Powerlines, a nonprofit modernizing the utility regulatory system. He was just named the Time 100 Next 2025, which is, for those not in the know, a list of people from around the world who are shaping the future and defining the next generation of leadership. Through his work at Powerlines, Charles is reimagining regulation for a new era of affordability, customer empowerment, and equitable access to clean energy. So today, we're about to explore how smarter regulation can build trust, drive innovation, and ensure that the clean energy transition benefits all of us. Charles, welcome to Power Perspectives. How are you this morning?
Thanks for having me. Doing well.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. And I appreciate you responding to my random cold outreach email to come on the show. It means a lot to me because I know you are very busy. You've got a lot going on right now. You've had this incredible journey from the Department of Energy to launching Powerlines, being named to the Time 100 list. So tell me a little bit about the origin story. How did you get involved in energy?
So I've been in the energy space for about a decade, and I gotta say, boy, every day it changes. There's something new. There's a new trend, a new announcement, a new technology, a new press release. This has just been such a fascinating past 10 years of energy. And, you know, I don't even remember exactly the singular moment when I got initially hooked, but I think actually back in late high school, we were trying to get solar panels on our school's roof, and that sort of kickstarted this journey where, you know, learned a lot about project finance at a young age and dealing with our regulator and dealing with our school district and different stakeholders and how we could get everybody aligned in the same direction. That's when I got to work with our local utility company and learned what a public service commission was. And fast forward a decade later, thankfully, that interest is still very much there. In fact, it's only just, you know, this space gets more and more interesting. And right now we're just happening to live through the most transformative period in the U.S. energy system, I would argue, since its inception. And that's a pretty exciting space to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredibly exciting. And I love to hear that you have been at this since high school. Not many people can say that. So it's very cool to hear. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about your current work on Powerlines. Can you tell me a little bit more about what Powerlines is? What's the mission? Why did you start it?
Yeah, so Powerlines, we're a national energy consumer education nonprofit. So really looking at how we can make sure that with the current situation of rising utility bills, that customers understand what's going on and consumers are able to make their voices heard around energy decisions that are ultimately going to impact them. And a lot of it is also looking at, you know, we've talked a lot about different regulatory barriers to our energy system these days, anything from siting and permitting challenges to the need for us to resolve interconnection queue challenges to the need for us to improve grid planning, all of that. I think a lot of it comes down to our regulatory system. And in this moment of a situation where we have rising electricity demand and rising electricity prices, I think it's forcing a lot more discipline for us to do everything that I just described and everything that the utility regulatory system has been good at for a long time, which is keeping rates low and keeping the lights on. But in this moment where there's a lot more complexities facing our grid, I think we ought to take a look at our regulatory system and figure out what still works that we should preserve and what doesn't work that we should try and modernize. So I think now's the moment for a lot of these conversations. Prior to starting Power Lines, I was at the Department of Energy working on grid modernization, and we looked a lot at different technologies like grid enhancing technologies, advanced conductors, and a whole slew of other solutions that can essentially optimize our existing grid more and make it more efficient. And I think that there's a lot of promise for deployment of those solutions that can both improve affordability and allow us to connect new sources of electricity demand to promote economic development and generate more jobs and economic opportunities for a lot of different
folks. It's really important context to start this conversation with, because, you know, to your point, the regulatory setup, this system, this framework has done a pretty good job for a pretty long time of keeping prices low and keeping the lights on. How they continue to do that is really the question that I want to talk about today, and how they do that in a way that suits everybody, that benefits everybody, with this large looming shadow of, you know, data centers and AI and electrification. All of that is going to have a considerable impact on power systems of the future. We all can agree on that. I would love to talk now about, you know, the sort of context for regulators dealing with that in this current moment. I read in your latest quarterly update from Power Lines, just 200 public utility commissioners oversee more than $200 billion each year in utility spending, which is nearly $1 billion per commissioner. These are, as you said, the U.S. Supreme Court justices of energy. This is really compelling stuff. So can you tell me a little bit more about how these commissioners play a central role or assume this really, you know, important role of leadership in the conversation about how we ensure customer equity in the future with all of that, you know, context that you just laid out before? Talk to me a little bit about what the commissioner's role really is today and how that's changing.
Well, as you pointed out, we call the public service commissioners in our country the U.S. Supreme Court justices of energy, because that's how much power that they have over our energy futures. You know, at roughly $1 billion a person, these folks have so much influence over, you know, obviously how much people pay for energy, where projects are located, types of investments that different companies are making. And all of that is really important because we're in a moment of rising electricity demand and rising affordability. And, you know, not to mention the fact that the issue of energy affordability is clearly becoming also a political issue, where there's a new set of stakeholders, including politicians and policymakers, that are talking about this. So I think in this moment, all of that forces a lot more, again, discipline of all stakeholders to make sure that everything is aligned going forward. All the incentives are aligned, because otherwise, I think there's real concern from different stakeholders that our regulatory system, our grid infrastructure, won't be able to handle all of the pressures that we're facing. Because when we think about all of the, for instance, power lines that are reaching the end of their useful life and just how much money it's going to cost just to replace that infrastructure, it's going to cost a lot of money. And somebody's got to pay for it, and people will need to pay for it, and we're going to need to figure out a way to allocate those costs. And in a moment where there are new solutions that are available that can materially put some downward pressure on some of the grid challenges, there's also an opportunity here with AI and what AI can do for the grid and help grid operators and utilities better manage the existing grid infrastructure. You know, when we think about challenges in the West, for instance, big reason why electric prices are going up in the West is wildfires. So what are the opportunities for AI to be able to harness that? So a lot of that, you know, because utility regulators essentially have the final say over what decisions are made, they need to be just as innovative and just as forward-thinking as the rest of the system. And everybody's got a part to play. And, you know, if any one stakeholder is not in lockstep with another, then that creates a challenge. And unfortunately, I think right now there is some of that risk happening, but I don't think it's too late for us to align all of those stakeholders in the same direction.
Yeah, and I want to dig more into this idea of regulators have this need, this, you know, requirement, I would argue at this point, to also be innovative. Regulators as innovators is something I'm sure we'll talk a lot about today. Before we get there, can you just walk me through a little bit how the decisions that these Supreme Court justices of the energy system in the United States, how the decisions that these commissioners are making cascade down to impact, you know, prices of I think both everyday people, but also the wholesale prices that we're looking at in the larger, you know, broader market picture. How do those decisions impact prices? Can you kind of walk me through that a little?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, as listeners know, the U.S. electric system is very balkanized. So you have a whole stack order and layering of different authorities. You have at the federal level, you have certainly the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which regulates wholesale prices, interstate pipelines and transmission lines. You also have Congress, of course, that can pass policies. And then you have at the regional level, you have the regional transmission organizations and the independent system operators that also, you know, they set and essentially create the rules for these wholesale markets. And then you have at the state level, the public utilities commissions. So in a lot of states, the PUCs don't, you know, to be clear, have 100% say over 100% of what comprises an electric bill. And I actually think we're starting to see in certain instances where people actually are seeing ramifications of that in terms of how FERC's rate making model impacts on transmission impacts people's utility bills at the residential level. So there's a disconnect, a lot of folks would argue, between our regulatory system and how do we align all of those together. So, but that depends on the market as well, because in some vertically integrated markets, there is a more direct relationship between the PUCs and the rates that are set. And so it varies by region in many ways.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this also tees up the conversation around the experience that is happening for leaders at utilities versus the experience that is happening for their customers, for their everyday, you know, John Doe ratepayer, the end customer, right? So what is the key difference there in terms of how cost is being shifted, allocated, who's paying for what, when we're talking about, you know, the decisions that these businesses are making versus the impact that it might have on everyday people who get a utility bill at the end of the month, and that's really their only indicator as to what's going on with their, you know, electric utility. Is there a difference there that's worth mentioning?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if you're an average consumer and you're trying to parse through a utility bill, it is so complicated. And there's not really, it's not like they teach you in school what a fuel adjustment charge is. And for a lot of folks, that actually is creating a lot of frustration because they see their utility bills change month to month, but they don't know why. And it's also not always clear to them what they can actually do about those costs. I think a lot of folks don't actually feel like turning off their lights at certain points in time is materially changing. And I think that's true because, I mean, if you look at just how much upward pressure on rates there's been in the last couple of years, I don't think it's as simple as just behavioral change. I mean, that doesn't have zero role to play, but I think the point is that consumers see their utility bills and are really frustrated by how opaque everything is. So I think there is an opportunity, I would say an imperative for a lot more education from utilities to their customers about how all this stuff works. Because otherwise, the risk is that frustration bubbles up into a situation where people who don't think about the grid on a day-to-day basis are talking about it and opining on it. And I would pose that question to the listeners, which is whether that's a preferable scenario. So I think there's a huge urgency around consumer education to make sure that folks know what's going on and what are the complex considerations that go into the grid, because it's a very complex machine, as has been made very, very clear. You know, some would say that it's the most consequential invention of the 20th century. Yet we, as consumers, know very little about it. So I think there's a huge need and opportunity for a lot of that consumer education to take place.
And what is your idea of that good kind of consumer education? You know, this is a question I hear a lot from people at utilities. I don't know how to do the storytelling. We try to do community outreach. We try to build these relationships, but it just doesn't always work the way that we want it to. So what would your advice be to utility listeners today who, want to create that relationship, who want to be able to tell that story? Is there a best path toward that or any advice that you might have?
I think it's got to be genuine. It's got to be human oriented. It's got to lead with compassion because, you know, right now there's a moment where people are feeling just burnt by the broader economic situation. And it's not due to any one product that they're consuming. It's the whole state of affairs. You know, like I think consumers right now feel a lot of pressure at an individual level. If you look at the data, electricity and gas prices are now the two fastest drivers of inflation. And this has been an issue that hasn't received a lot of airtime in the past. And I think that's actually all adding to this new force where a lot of folks are talking about utility bills that normally wouldn't be even touching this issue because that's how much they've increased, you know, 30 to 40% over the last 4 or so years. So when it comes to consumer education, I think, and storytelling, I think it's got to be human centric. And you know, that might be a little bit abstract, but I actually think that that work, it requires a lot of care, thought, and investment. It's not something that can just be spun up overnight. In fact, the more that one tries to rush that, the less likely that it'll work. And it's also got to be about listening to folks and understanding where they're coming from, because different people have different, challenges with affording their utility bills. And I don't think it's also appropriate to make, you know, sweeping generalizations necessarily depending on what a specific individual is facing. But I think that's where, you know, utilities should really lean in now is actually doing that work, because it's going to take a lot of time to build trust. And that's not something that can happen overnight.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've heard it said, energy is the new egg prices. So people are caring about this. It is something that is not just a niche topic of interest. This is happening at the national level. We saw it recently in, you know, elections in November in states like New Jersey and Virginia. Electricity was very much core to those elections. So we'll talk, I'm sure, at various points throughout the conversation about customers and all of this. But I want to switch gears here for a second to talk a little bit more about, you know, more than just those behavioral changes. You mentioned that it takes more than just turning the lights off or even just participating in demand response. When we're talking about what more there is, what role does regulation play in helping us get to that point where customer equity is, more within reach, let's call it, than it is today? How can regulators play a part in this future of energy that feels more equitable? What are the changes that need to be made, the innovations that need to happen within the regulatory system that we have today to ensure that future is possible? How would you modernize regulation?
Well, you know, I think it's a lot of different things. It's not just one thing, but one of which is we actually need to invest in these regulatory bodies because the set of challenges that they are dealing with are so complex. The breadth and depth of issues is just becoming more and more intense. Like if you think about the job of a regulator 20 years ago, even versus the job of a regulator now, it's just fundamentally way more complex. You know, you're having to deal with a significantly larger quantity of projects. You're dealing with interconnection queues. You're dealing with governance at the RTO or FERC levels that are above you. You're dealing with consumers in your jurisdiction. You're dealing with your governor that is sort of challenged or challenging you to lead on affordability more. It's a very complex job. And so if we're not actually appropriately resourcing these regulatory bodies, that's going to create a lot of friction and challenges for everybody involved in the utility regulatory system. And I'm not sure that that's something that, you know, we all want, right? Because that's one, is actually investing in these regulatory bodies. Another is to make it easier to participate. It's imperative for regulators and utilities to hear from a wide range of different stakeholders, including consumers that are impacted, because a $3 a month rate hike might not sound like a lot, but for some that are already struggling to pay their utility bills, that actually could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, right now, What we're seeing is roughly 80 million Americans that are struggling to pay their utility bills, meaning that they're trading off food, education, healthcare, rent, mortgage payments, student loans, all of that just to pay their utility bills because they know that if they don't pay it, they'll potentially get shut off from the power system. And so when we put that in context, I think it's critical for us to actually make it easier for those folks to participate and to provide public comment. Because the risk is that you make a decision that actually the regulator and the utilities doesn't realize actually could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And so I think that there's a lot more sensitivity in this moment of economic pressures that we all need to have. Otherwise, there's a lot of hidden risks that we are not going to be able to see.
So,
and I think regulators play a key part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's there are points that are well taken about we have to create the right incentive structures, both for people who are would-be regulators and for people who want to create a relationship with those regulators. Now, in your ideal vision for the future, what's different? What's most different about public utility commissions from today? What does the day-to-day look like that feels considerably improved, modernized, different from what the day-to-day is right now?
Well, I'll just say there's a deep irony in a sense that public is in the name Public Utilities Commissions, but the public is as far removed from PUCs as you can get. And look, some of that is, you know, intentional, some of that is unintentional. But the point is that, again, in this moment, the incentives of all the different stakeholders that make up our utility regulatory system should be increasingly aligned because, you know, if you run the course and you know, if electric rates continue to increase at the rate that they are, then you're going to reach a situation where there will be significant consumer backlash. And I don't think that's a scenario that anybody wants. Not the consumers, not the regulators, not the utilities, not the grid operators, not the solutions providers or vendors or the governors. I don't think anybody wants that. And so there's a window right now for us to take a serious look at solutions that can basically put downward pressure on rates. And that's both technological solutions, that's regulatory solutions, that is rate design and tariff solutions. There's a whole lot of things that folks need to be looking at right now. Because, again, I go back to this word, we need to be a lot more disciplined about how we're making investments in a affordability constrained environment. Because if we aren't strategic about that, then the risks of consumer backlash, as we're starting to see in terms of broader political discourse around rising utility bills, that may or may not actually be a good thing for all the different stakeholders that are currently engaged.
Yeah. And you know, when you think about how regulators become more innovative, more nimble, more discerning with how investments are made, you know, more open to those things you mentioned, tech regulation and the rate design and tariffs. How do we ensure that regulators get to that point? And this might be where we, you know, have a moment here to talk about the work that you're doing with Power Lines. Where does that happen? How does it happen? Where are the moments where we can seize this opportunity and help our current regulatory system to get to that point where it feels innovative and nimble?
Well, you know, I think this is something that, you know, when it's worked well, it's been done in partnership, right? In collaboration between the utilities, the grid operators, the regulators, and the broader ecosystem of stakeholders. Because if the different stakeholders are not on the same page, that creates friction where regulatory innovations either proposed by the utility or by the regulators don't actually work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could be investing a lot of regulatory capacity working on one thing over here, but if the different stakeholders are not on the same page, then that'll be a lot of time, capacity, resources invested in something that doesn't actually work. And then everybody points their fingers at each other and says, you know, that didn't work. So I think that's that in this moment, we just don't have that kind of time to waste. Because there's a, you know, the train has left the station on affordability. This is clearly an issue that is going to be a staying issue and a concern. And so I think in this moment, when it comes to different regulatory innovations, it's going to require a lot more honest, transparent, open conversation between utilities, regulators, and other stakeholders to actually make sure that what is being put on the table is beneficial for all the stakeholders involved.
Yeah, absolutely. When we think about what those kinds of conversations can look like, when there are those strong relationships, when we are being really, you know, choosy about the investments that are being made from, you know, regulators trickling down all the way to the utilities, to the customers who pay their bills each month, what kind of technology is most exciting to you? When we're talking about being discerning with investment, where do you think that that money can or should flow to ensure that we have this equitable energy transition? What excites you?
Well, you know, I talked about this earlier, but what are the use cases of AI that can make our grid operate more smoothly, more efficiently? This is something that I actually think that as a space, we don't talk enough about. We talk a lot about how AI is going to impact the grid from a electricity demand standpoint, but we don't really talk about the solution set for AI for the grid as much. And again, when we look at the drivers of electricity prices in a lot of regions, it's things that are outside of any one person's control. You know, extreme weather events, hurricanes in the Southeast, or winter storms in Texas and New England, or wildfires in the West. This is something that nobody wants. Nobody wants those things. And it's just going to, if we don't do something about it, impose cost pressures that nobody wants. It's not beneficial for anybody. So are there AI solutions that can materially and meaningfully be deployed to put downward pressure on the impacts of those events and also allow grid operators to more proactively plan ahead for them? I think that there are, and there's a lot of different solutions being deployed now and new startups being formed around this and new investors that are seeking to place bets on these different companies. Look, it's going to be challenging to figure out what's going to work and make sure that the grid can actually accommodate these technologies. But I think, again, we don't have time to waste because also the pressures facing the grid are only becoming more and more real as there are more and more concerns around you know, winter and summer weather conditions and what that means for grid constraints, and not to mention those extreme weather events. So that's a solution that I think could be helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the, you know, I think so much of our airtime is spent thinking about the challenges of the proliferation of artificial intelligence, and very little time is spent thinking about how this can actually be a real boon to the work that everybody listening to this show is doing. So I appreciate you bringing that up. So, you know, Charles, we've covered a lot in this conversation, from the impact of, you know, regulation on everyday customer bills, to the idea of an equitable transition to clean energy, to the ways that utilities and their regulators could modernize, could become more innovative. All of this has been a conversation about how we can build a better future. So I'd love to just hear, as you know, look ahead to the next 3, 5, 10 years, what feels most exciting? What gives you the biggest sense of optimism for the work that you're doing with Power Lines and as somebody who's been in the energy space since high school?
Look, I think this is the most exciting time in the electricity sector that we've had since its inception. And when we think back to the inception in the 1800s, when we invented this technology and when we commercialized it and when we said, look, this solution has the potential to transform all of our lives, and not just our lives, but the economy. And looking ahead to the 1900s and the whole ways in which, I mean, again, the grid being considered the most consequential invention and machine of our time in many ways. And now when we think about just how much of our modern economy is powered by electricity, and especially in this AI economy where electricity is the name of the game, I don't think we can understate just how important electricity is to our society. And I think that's exciting that more and more people are engaged and more people are interested in understanding how all of this works. And it reflects just how important electricity is and how consequential it is in our day-to-day lives. When we think about also public utilities commissions, you know, this was a setup, a body that we set up, again, over 100 years ago, when we said, look, you know, utility companies are monopolies. They're subject to economic regulation. And in exchange for that status, they need to be regulated by public utilities commissions. And there was this lockstep relationship. They're called public utilities commissions again because the intention is to serve the public interest. And I think that's a key North Star in all of this, is why did we even set up the system? Well, it all started with the consumer in mind, which is, again, this technology that we had invented. How do we get it to as many people as possible? And in this moment, you know, societally, globally, we still struggle with electricity access. Even in America, there are pockets that still struggle with access to electricity. And certainly, there's affordability challenges where 80 million Americans can't pay their utility bills in the wealthiest country in the world, in the most energy-rich country in the world. And I think all of that layered together is a urgent call for action for all of us to take stock of how we can improve and grow and modernize our regulatory system and our physical grid so that we can align all of these stakeholders' incentives and interests together. Because the future is bright, ultimately. We have the opportunity to power and grow our electricity system, and we know how important it is. But the only way for us to be able to do that is if our whole system actually has a continued social license to operate and has the trust of everybody involved. And I think right now that's not there in every sense. And but there's the potential for us to get there. So that's what excites me. And I think it's going to be a lot of work from a lot of different people. But I think that future can be very bright and has the potential to really unlock the full potential of our electric system that we have.
It's an exciting world, right? This is a timely reminder of why we have regulators and these PUCs in the first place. It all, you know, is in service of equity. That is what we were after in the first place. That is what we continue to pursue. And it's been really wonderful, Charles, to hear your perspective on how we get there. Now, to finish this out, I would love to get into our quick lightning round. So this is a rapid fire, three quick questions. Give me one word, a couple words as an answer, and we'll have a little bit of fun. So if you don't mind, first question for you. In a handful of words, what was it like to be recognized by Time on such a prestigious list of really, really innovative and impactful leaders? What was that like for you?
It was a pretty surreal moment. I mean, I think I was the only... Well, actually, there were probably a couple other utility regulation nerds, which pleasantly surprised me. There was a fusion company that was recognized, so it was pretty cool. But it was cool to hang out with a bunch of famous Hollywood actors that I didn't know who they were. So, and I actually think that was a good thing.
Yeah, that is the best way to go into a room of really famous people, is to just not know who they are. Awesome.
Exactly.
Okay. Next question for you. Is there anybody in the energy industry or in the space you would recommend our listeners check out their work, give them a follow? Who's somebody who you think is innovative and interesting and worth knowing more about?
I would point you all to the podcast that just came out with Arushi Sharma Frank. I think a lot of folks, she's got experience that spans so many different dimensions, and she's squarely at the intersection of AI and energy. So if you haven't already listened to that episode, you should go back and listen. But there's so many folks on Energy Twitter that I would call out. I still use Energy Twitter. I still am an avid follower, even though it's not as there's not as many people on it as anymore. But that's still where I get a lot of energy news. And I think there's so many great outlets that talk about these issues from different perspectives. I've obviously always been a big fan of Utility Dive and a bunch of the other podcasts that now exist in the space that talk about these issues. So there's a whole mix. I don't have just one recommendation. Mm-hmm. That would be like picking a favorite child. And unfortunately, I just can't
That's
do that.
Fair. So that's fair. I'll allow it. I appreciate you doing my job of promoting the episode that we did with Arushi. Thank you for listening to that. She's super smart. I've been getting a little bit more into energy Twitter lately. I think that there's the embers are still there, right? Like people are still there. People are still talking, and that's what we want. Okay, last question I have for you today. Any book or long read that you would recommend to our readers?
So, you know, everybody's talking about abundance, and maybe not so much now, but at least they were 3 months ago. And I think, to me, the biggest takeaway of that book is not so much what's in the book. It's more actually everything that lies outside of the book, which is all the conversations that it ignited, which is what is working and what is not working. And I think in some ways, there's so much urgency right now around, okay, how do we, fix this specific issue that just came up, or how do we connect this new load or customer, or how do we create this new tariff structure, or how do we get this new policy enacted? But I actually think, despite the intensity of all of that, which is very real, and we talked a lot about that, now is also a moment, though, to take a step back and to reflect and look at the grid that we have now and figure out and ask ourselves what is working and not working and what needs to be modernized and what needs to be changed. Because we're at an inflection point, and if there's any time where that sort of innovative mindset, that forward-thinking mindset, that change mindset, that option to really proactively chart out a path forward that actually works for everybody, it would be now, which again is ironic because of the pace of just day-to-day things that are popping up on people's literal and figurative desks. But now is the moment for that kind of step back and reflection. And I think if we don't do that, we risk a lot. But if we do do that, that's how we can unlock the grid and the electric system future that we've all been looking for. So now is, I would say, a moment of reflection. And I think the Abundance book helped do a lot of that for a lot of people.
Yeah, I love that. I think to end this conversation with the final reminder that now is the time, so much of the day-to-day work that any of us do, anybody listening to this, you or I, so much of it is in the weeds. We're bogged down. We've got so much going on. There's a laundry list of things to get done. Not taking the chance to think about the big picture, not taking the chance to pick your head up and really look around would be an incredible missed opportunity. So that is what I'm taking away from this conversation. Charles, it has been so wonderful to have you on Power Perspectives to hear more about power lines and your work and how regulation might change, hopefully for the better in the future. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
Kinsey, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you to Charles. Thank you to Power Lines. And thank you to everybody for listening today. I will see you next time on Power Perspectives.